This is Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin, the interview podcast with the best in Magic the Gathering. Thanks to GatheringMagic.com, where you can find this show and some of the best articles in Magic, along with Cool Stuff, Inc. The guest for the show is Daniel Ohlone Schwartz. You were part of the original era of Magic. What got you into Magic?
Very simple. My brother came home with some cards one day. I think I was a junior in high school, and he was a sophomore. This is in New York City, of course. Grew up in Brooklyn, New York. Just fell in love with it. And, you know, my brother and I would just got a few packs. So this was when Revised was out. We just play. You know, I love the look of them. Love the smell of the cards. Even then, you know, I was still in love with, you know, the new card smell. And I had a friend at the school that I went to. We went to different schools who also played. And we just went from there.
You and your brother are two of the best players in Magic history. Was there a rivalry between you two?
The short answer is no, but in the early days before there was a Pro Tour, your competition circle is a lot more limited, of course. But even then, when you just be going down to the local card store to play in like an 8-man tournament, I mean, we'd always be collaborating and working together. So from the very beginning, we had been working together for, you know, anything we had played in. But at the same time, there's nobody other than each other who we've played against more, and to actually get up to the level that we were aiming for, and, you know, we were competitive with it from the beginning. You know, there weren't that many of the, you know, the casual fun decks. Well, certainly there were, but as soon as, you know, we got a whiff of tournament Magic, that was definitely the, you know, the road we were pursuing with it. So as far as rivalry, I mean, it was definitely not, there's never the extent where, you know, we would ever be against each other in any way. But certainly there would be, gentle ribbing. A lot of it would come from the outside, you know, people always joking about who's the better brother, the smarter brother, the slower brother, which I'm the undisputed slower brother, but, there was always that, but, so that's where we had our quote unquote rivalry, but, there was never a point where, we would, that I can remember going in, you know, any point in competitive Magic, even to, you know, the earliest days.
You always put the two of yourselves as a team first.
Yes, for the most part, I would say, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, except for the smallest of tournaments. But, I mean, there was never a tournament where, like, I had a deck that was secret from my brother. We were always drawing from the same pool of cards, so.
When did the game of Magic change from being fun to being competitive for you?
I guess that evolved. Well, it was always fun. And I get it just scaled up and from, you know, going to, you know, a card store in Brooklyn to going to a card store in Queens, and then being in New York City, the epicenter of the, you know, I think the original competitive tournaments when they finally had the big tournament in the, you know, in the hotel. I mean, it was drawing like 1,000 people, so it hit pretty hard. With that, and of course, Neutral Ground. Having, you know, structured tournament events, which for, you know, a card game, which, I mean, back then, you know, in the mid-90s is, you know,
yeah,
I think was unprecedented. It pretty much came to us. You know, there wasn't, it happened, I guess, relatively fast, you know, okay, from when we actually learned how to play Magic to, you know, the buildup of, you know, how competitive it was. And I guess when we started playing in 95, so I suppose there was already like a world championships, you know, Duelist magazine was probably already published. There was, you know, quote unquote competitive Magic from the beginning of when we played, but as far as it actually scaling up to something where, you know, you would travel somewhere. But of course, our luck was that we lived in New York City, and New York City was the place where everyone was traveling to. I mean, it was pretty much the entire, you know, Eastern Seaboard that was coming to these events. I actually live one block away right now from the New Yorker Hotel, which is where they held all the events. If you told me, 15 years ago, I'd be here just a block away.
That's something about a little bit of history there you have right there with you.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear the story of how you met John Finkel and then how Team Antarctica came together.
So how did we meet John? Well, John was one of those players that we knew of. He was one of the Jersey kids, even though none of the Jersey kids liked John. So John was sort of alone in that respect. So just a guy that we would see at the tournaments. He would come to Neutral Ground every now and then to play. We were nerdy, but he was far more nerdier than us. But Steve and I, were, I guess, a little more accepting of John as a friend. It started with, I think, tolerance and built its way up to respect and then eventually to friendship. That's how we came to know John. And I guess just from being the guys closest to his age that put the effort in to respect him and work with him. The actual Team Antarctica thing, as far as, when Wizards of the Coast came up with, the official designation of, teams, certainly were years in between there where, there were the unofficial teams running around, very fun era with, the Team Dead Guy and the, the PCL and the West Coast. So there's different definitions of teams, obviously. Which is interesting, though, because Steve and I never really declared ourselves as any part of a team. We were never on a Team Dead Guy. We were always just essentially the two of us working together with whoever was going to work with us.
What was your role on the team when you tested for events?
I try to come up with, ideas. We spent a lot of time, early years of college, because that's what overlapped with, part of the peak of my, competitive days, just sitting in class, writing down deck ideas, a lot of solitaireing decks, and it would vary, three of us, and I think the kind of New York group in particular in the early days were notorious for being a little, not being as into the constructive preparation, got away with it a bit more back in those days. Because, obviously the limited and constructed events were bifurcated. So you really could just be, basically the plan for those years was to really excel in the limited events, try to have a solid deck for the constructed events and then really prepare for Worlds. Worlds was where we would really hunker down and spend a lot of time preparing. We just felt like our chances to win at Worlds in those days was higher, with somewhat lower level of competition, and just more time over the summer to actually prepare. So those are times where we actually would, spend weeks just working together, playtesting, and we weren't that good at. Well, I don't want to say if it's good or bad, but we weren't that big on actually designating roles. Maybe if we had actually, done the Rob, I remember Rob Hahn infamously had a post on the dojo back in the day saying you need a builder, a collector. We always mocked that someone on the team was the collector.
Yeah.
we might have been able to be a bit more efficient if we had some more designated roles, but we were just so intensely into it, all of us, that there was just so much that everyone was, providing and constantly thinking about and talking about and playing, and that their decks just didn't have time to stop to think about, how could we structure this.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you believe that Team Antarctica is the greatest three-man team ever?
I would feel comfortable saying we're the greatest three-man team of our era. I really don't know enough about, say, the last 7 years. How we would. Sure. Okay. I'll do it. Why not?
Let me rephrase the question. Basically, if we could put the three of you against any three players with a unknown set to play with for a sealed event, do you feel that your team would have the advantage?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Here's where my hesitation was, everyone always nuances their answers for greatest of all time, when it comes to sports and magic, you know, the trying to reference the eras, but I guess that's no fun. You know, it's basically it's the correct answer, but I understand it's a cop-out. And so another interesting thing, I think, is that, you know, I guess we were at our peak level of playing maybe at different times. I remember playing on teams with David Williams and William Jensen during some of those team Grand Prix, and playing together with those guys, you know, I also felt like we were the best team in the room at those points as well. So, you know, kind of with my, I just feel like, I guess maybe that our peaks overlapped at different times. I mean, even right now today, if just, you know, with, you know, just putting back together me, you know, John and Steve, you know, we're definitely capable of beating anyone. My brother's barely playing now, but I've been watching him, you know, I watched him play in the last few Grand Prix he played in, and he apparently can still just pick up cards and play. And John plays a ton still, and I'm playing enough. I would like to get some serious preparation into the next team Grand Prix just to kind of, you know, test this theory out.
I'd like, you brought up William Jensen, mm-hmm. and I was going to bring this question up a little later on, but I'll push it up now since you brought it up.
Okay.
He missed by one vote last time to make the Hall of Fame. Do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame this year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I voted for him. And like I said, when I played with him, he was, you know, I had never seen anyone, you know, I mean, he's only one other person I had played with who you know, was in that zone. And obviously, you know, I think we all know who that other person is. So, and, you know, he's just one of those few players that demonstrated the, you know, just, I guess that's, I don't know which number sense it is, but this is the sixth sense of just balancing everything in his head and just being, you know, 10 steps ahead of everyone.
You also said you played with David Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he made the transition from Magic to poker and now comes back to Magic and ironically won the three-man tournament with mm-hmm. Paul Rietzel and Matt Sperling. How much fun was it to see David win a GP like that?
Oh, it was fantastic. Dave was always was and obviously still is someone who's enjoyed playing Magic, you know, more than... You know, more than anyone. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, it's hard to say more than anyone because obviously we all love and enjoy it, but he clearly was very high. If you were to make rankings of who's enjoyed playing Magic more than anyone, he would definitely be near the top of the list.
Is that why you think he still wants to go to all the Pro Tours and is constantly online streaming?
Oh, absolutely. I think just because he's having fun. Whether he wants to, you know, put a place in history, you know, win a Pro Tour at some point, I'm sure he's just doing it because he loves it, and it's just the best form of competition for him.
Is John the greatest of all time, and why is the New York City Magic scene so good?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think the conversation is on just, you know, whether it's John or Kai, and I think I remember discussing this with, you know, we discussed this with Kai at some point, and basically Kai is probably the hardest working Magic player ever, combined with his talent, where John is just the best naturally. But I mean, John, when he was younger and more annoying, when he was that stubborn, nerdy John, he certainly put in a lot of work. And, you know, a lot of it now, I guess, is quote-unquote natural ability, but fortunately we do play a lot now still, so that's a pretty dangerous combination, as, you know, people saw a few years ago in Kuala Lumpur, and of course, you know, last year in Hawaii. Well, in New York, we have a pretty robust mailing list of Magic players just to get together and draft, and we play a decent amount. I guess there's an average of one draft per week. You know, it may go up at different times, you know, based on a new set coming out. I recently put together a cube. I built the over the holidays. I built the holiday moto cube from my old cards laying around. I'm trying to do that as well. You know, mix in some, you know, obviously some quote unquote casual or fun magic in there. But even just playing with a cube is very important for just keeping, my magic playing levels up. You know, it's easy. Even if it's off format from something that's going to be in a competitive event, it's very important.
What are some of your best moments of your Magic career?
Best one was certainly when actually, I guess it wasn't quite my career maybe, but it was definitely when my brother won the Pro Tour in LA on the Queen Mary back in 99. that was definitely the most enjoyable moment of my Pro Tour career. In that event, he beat me on the second day. He had to beat Justin Gary to make top eight. He beat Mike Long and John in the top eight. Sure, the list of the other people that we both played against that tournament is pretty crazy. That was it. That was definitely when, we felt like, definitely felt like we'd accomplished it. Him winning that, really showed that I felt like that was what we had set out to accomplish. You know, like I said before, my brother and I were never a part of, Team X, Team Y. I guess we were Team Neutral Ground, just preparing with, the guys who played Magic in New York at Neutral Ground.
Who are some of the best competitors you played against?
Oh, the list is long. I feel like I just need... The Pro Tour was, I guess, a little bit more tighter back in the day, so I played against everyone. Kai, Dirk. I think I played against Kai and Dirk multiple times in their first Pro Tour in Chicago, the one that Dirk won. Actually beat Dirk and convinced Kai to intentionally draw with me in the last round. And then we showed each other our decks, and he just shook his head because his deck was so much better than mine. But, we were drawing the top 32. It was our first top 32 for both of us. And we were both pretty happy about that. Little did we know what we were going to go on to do, but I really don't know who I've not played against.
Compared to the current Pro Tour, was there a smaller percentage of people who could win back then?
A smaller percentage back then had a chance to win?
Yes.
I'm not sure about that. No, I don't think so. It's hard to tell. I haven't played as much since the era of 1,000 people Grand Prix. So a lot of what I know is secondhand. Feel like there might... My sense is now that there is a... I really don't know. Maybe there's a bigger top tier now.
Do you feel there's a larger variance now in comparison to back when you played?
I feel like that the elite players now seem to have a larger gap between themselves and the next tier. So I feel like the tiers... That there was less of a, bottom end crowd, back in the day, and then the tiers of the top players from back in our day there were more of them. So, you had to deal with the Kais and Johns and Bobs, and then there were the next level. When you have Hall of Famers at the second level, with people like my brother and Darwin and those guys, you're just at the second level. And then after that, coming down to maybe me in that next level, probably I don't even know about that. But where today, I feel I'm not sure how much of a spread there is between, the top of the elite players and then, whoever you may name as the top 20 players. I don't know. But then I think there might be just a big drop-off after them.
You used to write articles about Magic.
Mm-hmm.
How much fun was it to write?
I didn't write that many articles, but I know that I did write an article that was published in, The Duelist, and it was a Rising Stars article. I was just, bitter kid, just like, I want to write something. And it was probably shortly after Pro Tour 1. I remember I wrote that John Finkel was a rising star to watch out for. So I called it. I called the shot. I forget who else I mentioned. I know Justin Schneider was in there. He eventually went on to top eight of Pro Tour. Nate Clark was in there. I think I only knew him from IRC at that point. You know, we always joke about how crazy, you know, the top eight of the, you know, the juniors were back in the day. If you look at them, they're probably better than than the senior circuit.
How much do you think Wizards of the Coast miss having the junior circuit?
I'm not sure. Feel like the best answer may be to have both options for the younger kids, just because it is possible to be really competitive at the age of 15 or 16. And I mean, I think we've even seen kids at the age of 13 or 14, you know, being very competitive. It would be nice to have an alternative option for them as far as them playing amongst kids. If there's any maturity issues or so, just to, you know, give them their own space to work in, I guess, if you will. You know, I think, so like looking back at like someone like William Jensen, who was a bit younger than us back in those days when he first started playing. And I guess I'm kind of going to circle around to back to the question about the Hall of Fame. Because it's relevant where he was a bit younger than the rest of us when he started playing. I mean, his nickname was Baby Huey because he was, I mean, he's just this, you know, this baby-faced kid with braces who was, you know, fun, you know, competing with us. What's really hurt his hurt his Hall of Fame chances is that a lot of the impression he made on the Pro Tour when he first started playing was that he was just this immature, annoying kid. And I'm sure that if some of these people, I keep picking on John, you know, well, John from 15 years ago, you know, some of the people had met John, talked to John back when he was, you know, 14 or 15, they may not have ever come around to liking him from there.
How much does it mean for you to have a ballot for the Hall of Fame?
Actually, I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I'm happy to have it. I see the vote as a privilege. It's a little stressful, I suppose, just with all of the gaming involved in the balloting and having gamers involved in this voting process and just having this kind of, you know, survivor-like political process. I feel that, you know, maybe us players are not removed enough. You know, I'm sure that they wanted to balance, you know, having this Hall of Fame thing with also making players, you know, feel a part of the process and get passionate in discussing it. But in the end, maybe it would have been best if it was done by writers. Sort of the way they do in sports, just have the press do it. No, I guess the press in sports don't do it so well, but a mix of press and actually watch the employees and judges might have been enough. I guess what I'm getting at is maybe I prefer just the selection committee and not the selection plus players committee. But since, I mean, this is the way they're doing it, and clearly, you know, there's reasons to do it. I mean, it's very exciting to be a part of the process, and it's always fun and thrilling to, you know, do the research and cast the votes.
So you take the time not just to look over the ballot and go, okay, I know this guy was okay, blah, 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 but you actually take the time to look at each player to see what their credentials are?
Yeah, but I don't think I do it enough. I'm guilty of it, and I can only admit it's tough when you have so many friends that you know you'd love to see in there. I mean, it's really hard when you have some of these other players who weren't even in my era, who I've never seen play. The people who I've played with have never played with or against them. You know, the people like a lot of the Japanese players. There weren't that many, if any, good Japanese players back when I was playing, so it's been a long time. It would be great if it was. I guess one of the problems for the Magic Hall of Fame compared to other sports is that it was harder to do it era by era in Magic. I mean, it's sort of getting up to that point now. You know, there's been enough of the catch up in the past where, you know, as players come on the ballot, they get considered. Versus players of their era, rather than have to compare. You know, it was interesting. My brother obviously has taken the long side of anyone from their eligibility to get in. So every year you'd be talking about comparing what my brother did to a different group of people. But the truth is that my brother was, you know, doing all those things back in the days of, you know, John and Kai and Mike Long and Bob and Randy and Darwin and, you know, all the other people that are, you know, were already in the Hall of Fame, and they were the best players. And now all of a sudden, I mean, it was interesting and it's exciting that, you know, my brother was able to.
Were you as frustrated as some of the people were that it took as long as it did for your brother to get in?
Yeah, upset about it. You know, we were pretty passionate about it and really wanted him to get in. I understood that, you know, there'd be a lot of people voting that may not have known him, may not have, you know, known as much about and then every year went on, you know, there it would be that much more removed from the, you know, the time when he was, you know, actually winning and at the top of his game. But at the same time, the people that were getting, it's, you know, there was never a point where, you know, people were getting voted in that, you know, I felt they weren't deserving of it. So there was at least that, knowing, I mean, it'd be one thing if, you know, people were just, you know, desecrating the hall with unworthy people. But at the same time, yeah, my brother definitely would hold his own, you know, above, you know, most of those people. So
you came back this year with the rest of Team Antarctica to play a team event. Mm-hmm. I have a couple questions in regard to this. Which of you made the first inquiry about getting the team back together again?
Pretty much as soon as it was announced, John just emailed Stephen and me and was just checking to see if we wanted to go, and that was it. I said yes, Steve said yes, and we were done.
What did it feel like to play with the team again?
It was fun. It was tough because we didn't get any blue cards, so felt good. It was, well, the one weird thing is that now you can talk to your teammates, and kind of, it's a little weird. You would think having John in the middle, being able to talk to everyone, it's actually a bit of a distraction. I think I actually missed the old days where we just sat down and played. And but it definitely was, you know, just kind of thrilling to go, you know, sit down again and know that if I lose, I got the two of them to, yeah, got two Hall of Famers, but, you know, to get my back, hopefully. So, it was never the case, though. You would think so, but
you said earlier that you would like to play more Magic.
I guess just a little more of everything. I don't see the logic in me getting into really competitive Magic again, because if it was a goal worthy of aiming for, then it means it would take way more time than I would really have to invest in it. If I was able to just sort of, you know, just pick up a deck and go and play and win, then no, I'd take it. I've done that before, I guess. There were times in the where I, you know, would just go and go to a PTQ and somehow figure it out and get back. So I guess that would be the challenge in itself. But I think I just want to just play a little bit more Magic online. I will go to the Grand Prix in Providence, the Team Grand Prix. We do plan to play together again there. I think there's even a local Star City team event that I may want to play in. I'm not sure if Steve and John are going to go, but I'll probably find two more New Yorkers that I can go with that day. I just don't know about having the time investment to become, you know, a competitive player again, but I'll choose my battles and find as many of the, you know, the fun outlets, such as, you know, just drafting new sets.
So you would do like a sealed event or something like that? Potentially, if it was relatively close to you?
Possibly. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, on the Grand Prix or you know, that Star City level. But I think I've had those opportunities and passed them up too, so... Yeah, I guess this, you know, hopefully this year I'll do it a bit more. So, you know, looking to probably do one in May, and then, of course, the Providence Grand Prix in June. And I'm sure when that Vegas Grand Prix approaches, there'll be talk about going there as well. So there's no way I can rule that out. I don't have a plan to go at this point, but it's going to be pretty hard to say no, I'm sure, when people start talking about going.
Don't you think the three of you would have a distinct advantage because this is older formats where you'll know a lot of the cards instantly and should have a technical advantage because you played them first?
Maybe. that's definitely been helping me with when they invented the modern format. That really helped me just be able to pick up decks and play. You know, I can't even remember the last time I had to play Standard. It was at Worlds back in 2006 or so, when they had it in New York, the Javits Center. That was later than 2006, I'm sorry. But the last World they had in New York was the last major event I played in, and I believe there was Legacy, and I was like, oh, I know all these cards. I know how to, you know, cast Swords to Plowshares, but remember I had to play some fairy Standard deck, and that did not go well at all. So... it has helped that, you know, like a lot of the few competitive wins I've been able to get in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years has been around, you know, modern legacy formats where I actually already have the cards and have played with them for the last 15 years. So perhaps, you know, perhaps we would have a slight advantage there.
What do you have to say for those people who are trying to make it on the tour nowadays?
Hmm. just I can't think of anything other than just do it. But man, I don't know what it's like nowadays. Those PTQs must be tough, and I don't know enough about, I guess, just the Planeswalker point system. So I'm not even sure what angle they want to be taking, but I guess the best way to do it is to really just obsess over it and just really, you can get a lot done just working on your own. I think that, and that's a lot of, and I guess back in the day when we prepared, you know, I did a lot of thinking about it on my own, just writing things down, dreaming about magic, thinking things through, just playing solitaire decks. I still do this constantly. I mean, there were events that I played in where I did not prepare with another person at all, and I just sat, we just built one combo deck that I want to play and just shuffled it over and over and imagined playing games out over and over. So, you know, there's a lot of work you can put in, even if you don't have, you know, the, you know, support from other people, you don't have the time to, you know, find someone else to play against. You can, it is possible to just sit there at home, and especially now with all the, you know, all the great writing there is out there in Magic, you know, all the research you can do, you can just do a lot of homework on your own and really get a lot of insight and get and really push yourself forward, even if, you know, you don't have the chance to get out there and get to the.
Thank you for listening to Inside the Magic Studio with our guest, Danny Elms. One of the things you learn a lot about the history of Magic is that there are so many unique stories. And from today's episode of learning a little more about how John worked and how they trained and how sometimes preparation wasn't what you think compared to nowadays players, it's kind of amazing to see just how really talented these guys really were. And again, thank you for listening.